to Expert Instruction, the Teach by Design podcast, where we dive deeper into the research surrounding student behavior by talking with the people implementing these practices, where they work, and with the students they support. I'm Megan Cave.
I'm Danielle Triplett.
Welcome back.
Yay.
It's a new season.
Welcome to 25-26 school year.
Yeah, it feels like summer was a mere blip. Indeed. Is anybody else feeling that?
Yes.
Like, it's like we shut our eyes to take a nap and now it's like the alarm went off.
Here we go.
Danielle and I are trying our very best to hit the ground running for you all.
Yep, we're doing it.
Bringing the energy today.
Yes.
You know, over the last couple of years, you and I have had a theme that helps to guide the topics that we select and the people that we talk to and the work that we do, both over on Teach by Design in the blog and in the community of practice. And so this year,
we love a theme.
Don't you just love a theme?
We do. So this year we've got a really important theme, right? We're looking at the circles from PBIS and we really are honing in on where we have the biggest impact at PBIS apps, which is data.
Yeah. It's a core element. It's a part of everyone who implements PBIS. Every school implementing PBIS has to focus on data at some point. And so we're going to spend the year talking about data in PBIS, not just at tier one, but at tiers two and three, and how you can make them all kind of work together.
Absolutely. Right? And we really mapped it out for the whole school year, like educators do out there with their backwards planning and where do we want to be at the end. And so we really intentionally started at that like foundational big picture level.
That's
and
right.
Who better to tell that story than Dr. Rob Horner.
That's right. The briefest of introductions to our, I don't even know what we would call him, our colleague, our friend, our mentor, our former director,
yes,
Dr. Robert Horner. He's an emeritus professor of special education here at the University of Oregon. So he's recently, I would say, within the last 4 years or so, 5 years, retired. But he still lingers around once a professor.
Yes, exactly.
His research has always focused on applied behavior analysis, positive behavior support, multi-tiered instructional systems, equity in education, and systems change. And there's so much really that we could say about the work that he has done over his career. But fundamentally, the reason that we had him on this podcast in particular and intentionally is because he and his colleagues are the reason that any of us talk about PBIS and the reason why any of you use Swiss in your schools.
Exactly.
They were really pioneers in this effort, both in the framework around around classroom management and PBIS, as well as these online data systems that schools can use to collect their data, but also to look at and use their data in their decision making.
I found it so interesting hearing the history of that and even how when he started working with these schools, like there were not online there was no technical way to do that. It was on paper and pencil and they were capturing it that way. And here we fast forward to now when Swiss is one platform that provides that, but there are others out there. Like we're not the only one doing this, but it's,
there was a time
when this was a novel concept.
That's right.
It really tells that story.
That's right. He dropped a lot of gems on a lot of quotes. Rob is good for a quote. And I think one of them had to do with how using data is an act of humility.
Yeah.
It's one that I'm going to sit with and think about for a little while. And I think what he means there, or the way that I heard it, is that we can all come to our schools thinking that we know the experience. We know what's happening there. And that by even agreeing to look at data, you're agreeing to open yourself up to the possibility that maybe there's something different going on.
Absolutely. Well put, Megan. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. You know, one of the things that a quote that I know I heard him say and I've quoted him on is PBIS is really a about making the smallest change that can have the biggest impact. And whether that's looking at data and saying, gosh, this feels like a big problem, but what if we just tried increasing supervision, let's say, in this area that we're experiencing these unwanted behaviors or something like that? Like, It's really transformational, because sometimes these problems feel so big. Like, how are we going to fix this? What can we do? Right. Mm-hmm. But if you sit with that and that's your approach versus saying, what are the few things we can do, the skills and resources that we have, and try that, mm-hmm. And, you know, he shows us again and again that that's what it takes.
Rob has a real passion for schools and mm-hmm. for teachers. Mm-hmm. You can tell in the way that he talks that the work that he has done over his career mm-hmm. really is meant to support the work that adults in the building are doing. Mm-hmm. And so when he was talking to us about how data just help us to ask the right questions, mm-hmm. it really is just that we have to bring a human element to the graphs that we look at mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's what's expected, actually.
Absolutely.
That data aren't going to tell you the decision you need to make.
No.
You have to actually be the person to look at that information and make a decision.
Right. And talk about the context, right? And what's going on that the data doesn't tell, right?
Rob comes to us with decades of experience. Mm-hmm. He has so many insights. It was really a pleasure to have him spend some time with us. Mm-hmm. It's a longer episode. I can already tell it's going to be a long episode, uh-huh. but I don't think that there's any part of it that you're going to want to miss.
Right.
There's a lot of clever insights and real ideas that you can take with you, mm-hmm. Even if it's just to leave a little bit more inspired.
Exactly.
Listen in on our conversation with Dr. Robert Horner, and you're going to love it.
You're going to love it. Welcome back, educators.
Well, thanks for being here, Rob, live in person, our very first guest to be in our office and in our recording studio.
Well, I'm delighted to be here.
I know.
Welcome.
It's a good episode to have this be our first in-person guest. It's nice.
Kicking off the new school year.
It's nice.
This may be your studio, but this particular room was actually an office that we had 35 years ago.
Amazing.
So, really?
How many people did you cram into this space?
Well, this space was 3 offices.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's now one big room. That's all it is. And I think we've had several people in it since then.
Mm-hmm.
But
over the years here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's how it works on college campuses, right? You have to repurpose off spaces wherever you can.
Things shift over time, but it's a huge recording space
in
the work we do.
Well, I would say welcome back, but you still come around the offices. Dr. Rob Horner, he is here with us today as our special guest and used to be the director here mm-hmm. At Educational and Community Supports, the department where PBIS Apps is housed. Mm-hmm. So I would say welcome back, but you're still around. You float around here and there.
Well, absolutely. And it's a hard place to leave.
It
always
sure is.
Interesting happening.
I think so. And like once you're in it, it's hard to get out, I think. So
that's a nice thing to say.
This is our first episode for the 25-26 school year. And this school year, we're really focused on the data element of PBIS. And so we really wanted, as a research unit, as an organization, we really wanted to pay special attention to that particular element of our framework, because it's one that we hold near and dear to our hearts as a group. And so who better to kick us off?
For sure.
Than Dr. Rob Horner. So at some point, Rob, we have to just kind of start way back at the beginning. Not so far back. I mean, you're a youthful man. Not so far back. But at some point in your career, PBIS became an idea in your mind. And we were just really curious about, like, when did that start to take shape? Why did it take shape? Did you think that there was something missing and you were trying to fill a gap? How did all of that happen and when?
You know, it's a great question. And you sent me that question a few days ago.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, I've never really thought about it quite that way.
Mm-hmm.
First off, I don't think PBIS as a framework or an entity was the thing that we started off with.
Right.
Mm.
Second is, no one person is really responsible for PBIS.
That's true, right?
George Tsugai, Ed Kamehanui, Jeff Colvin, even Zig Engelman and Wes Becker were involved in ideas around the whole big concepts.
Yeah, right.
The way that PBIS really got started was because we were really committed to working with the schools in the Eugene area. We would go to schools and we would say, look, we're doing research, but what we really want to do are things that are going to be helpful to you. So the bottom line question is really, how do you make schools more effective learning environments?
Sure.
Yes.
And not just for a few kids, but for everybody. And most of us have been in schools as teachers or as administrators or assistants. So we came to this with a sense of the practical elements of what do you really need to do and how does that work? One of the messages that we got that was just heartbreaking was this message that kids are engaging in behaviors that are not just detrimental and a real barrier for them, but they're things that interrupt education for everybody.
Sure.
Hitting, kicking, spitting, biting, throwing, screaming, tantruming, even withdrawal, running away, right? Teachers, I have to tell you, I just have immense compassion for talking with teachers about how committed they are to doing a good job and how frustrated they were with their lack of success with kids who were engaging in problem behaviors. And so what George and I really started doing is we said, hey, this is, we actually know what to do.
Right.
And so we would go in and they would say, here's Philip or here's, you know, Dolores. And they would tell us what she did and they would tell us how unhappy they were with what she did. And we would listen and we would say, hey, cowboy, here, we can actually work with this.
That's right.
And so we would build a behavior plan and the behavior plan would go into place and the kid would get better. The teacher would feel much stronger. And the great part was the student didn't just stop doing things that were inappropriate. They started doing things that were more functional and successful. All right. So that was just heady times. I mean, we can actually make a difference. The problem was there were more of those kids than there were of us.
You were outnumbered.
And the other part was that we would work with a kid in Springfield and we would see her in fourth grade and she'd be doing great in fifth grade. And then all heck would break loose in sixth grade. You know, we were back to where we started. So really, George's real epiphany was this whole idea of, yes, we can do individual behavior supports, but we're not really going to make a difference in the world unless we can change the whole school.
Systems.
So the idea was the two big, really big ideas, invest before they make mistakes. So be preventive and build a whole culture of the school, not just repairing individual behavior problem situations, but really looking and saying, all right, if the kids are going to be successful, it's not just obeying teachers. It's interacting successfully with each other. I mean, a little bit of humility is good here in education. The kids learn as much from each other as they do from us. So we need to make that a process that is constructive, not a process that is either neutral or detrimental. So that's what really led to our looking at the whole problem differently. Then the thing that I love about your using the term framework is PBIS is not like a package. You don't go to buy PBIS in a box. It is a set of core features that are used in slightly different ways in urban schools, in rural schools, in little schools, in different ways. You can pull things together. I mean, just the idea of identifying a set of behavioral expectations sounds pretty straightforward. And you go online, you look in the website and be respectful, be responsible, be safe. But realistically, when I went to New Mexico and we were working with schools that were primarily getting kids from the reservation.
That's right.
I gave my rap about PBIS and defining and teaching behavioral expectations. Mm-hmm. And this one just very gentle guy came up and patted me on the back and said, you know, overdressed white guy, this is really great.
Yeah.
But we've been doing this for 400 years.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And we don't talk about being respectful and responsible. I said, well, what do you talk about? Yeah. He said, being brave and being honorable. Mm-hmm. I said, great. We can work with that.
Yeah,
totally.
So right now, tell me what it looks like in the hallway.
That's right.
Tell me what it looks like on the playground.
Yeah.
Tell me what it does not look like. Mm-hmm. And so the framework, the idea of a framework allows you to make it fit the local culture. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make people sort of focus in on it has to be the way that they wrote it in page 39.
Yeah, right.
The trick, though, is to build a framework that is flexible where it needs to be flexible, but very clear mm-hmm. about core features.
That's
mm-hmm.
right.
So
exactly.
There are core features to PBIS.
It turns out. Yeah, there are.
And the reason why it's so great to be focusing on data is it wasn't that PBIS identified data. It was more that data identified the core features of PBIS.
Ooh.
Say what you mean by it.
Yeah, tell us more.
We learned what to focus on by watching what the kids did, where they did it, and how they did it. Uh-huh. We learned, I mean, when we started off, we had lots of things that we wanted schools to do.
Yeah.
But what we learned by using fidelity data with the teachers, by looking at the behavior of students on playgrounds, in cafeterias, and how that's different than the classroom, we learned what's the smallest number of features that's really necessary. It was watching the data from the schools that were implementing that we learned how to become more efficient, that we learned what were the things that resonated with the students and the families, not just the teachers. And so in many ways, the emergence of PBIS came from problem solving. Uh-huh. It wasn't that we started with PBIS and then we put them in schools. Mm. We started with schools and PBIS emerged.
Yeah. Did you always know that data was going to be an element of this work that you were doing? I mean, as a researcher, certainly it would make sense, but.
Yeah, you need to, that's part of what you do as a researcher, right? You're going to have some data you've got to collect and you want to show over time you're having an impact.
Did you think,
right?
though, that you would introduce that concept as part of the framework that schools would be implementing, that they would need to collect and monitor their own data?
The collection and monitoring of data is an act of humility.
Oh, say more.
It's only if you think you actually know it all that you don't need data.
Yeah,
I've got a friend who gave me a T-shirt, and it says, without data, you're just another person with an opinion.
Right? I mean, it's kind of true.
Yeah, valid.
Mm-hmm. But the thing that having... So think about it this way. Data is basically information.
Sure.
And we're not really... I mean... We love and we put a lot of pressure and emphasis on collecting data, but the data are a step to an outcome, not the outcome itself.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We want to build decision systems more than data systems. Mm-hmm. We want to build problem solving, not the collection and celebration of graphs.
Right.
And the difference is the reason why I'm saying the collection and use of data is an act of humility, is because everybody has their own experience for how this works. I mean, if you think about, think about your own children,
right?
And you think about what you've got living experience that tells you this is what works and this is how things operate. Mm-hmm. And that's incredibly important. There's no one should ever denigrate that.
Right. Mm.
But if you're going to work as a group, it's very hard to have all of those individual experiences of how things work come together. And part of what we found is that collecting data, the very first thing that it does is it builds a coherent, common vision for what are we doing? Mm-hmm. So think about, I mean, y'all, Danielle, you've been in schools where you have seen mm-hmm. the teachers just incredibly frustrated.
Totally.
And you say, well, what is happening? And mm-hmm. they just tell you, let me tell you what those reprehensible young people exactly. are doing.
It's for asking. Exactly.
And you just feel their frustration, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But then I've seen you do it. You are such a good therapist. You listen well and you nod and you mm-hmm. make people feel that that's okay.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, that's sweet. But now tell me exactly what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Where do they do it? Mm-hmm. When do they not do it? So mm-hmm. one of the biggest questions is not just what are they doing, but when do they not do those behaviors? Mm. And we'll find out. They are absolutely out of control in the cafeteria and in the recess.
Yeah. Mm.
But they're brilliant in class.
Yeah. Mm. Or like in band class or something exactly. they're passionate about and they express themselves, right? That's we hear this all the time.
So yep. one of the great things is you can, just by doing that, mm-hmm. you can help people say, it's not... Clearly, it's not the kids,
yeah. right.
because mm-hmm. they can be
they're
just
capable.
Fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So instead of changing them, mm-hmm. we need to change what we really can change, the context.
Mm-hmm.
And think about getting a group of people mm-hmm. to the point about saying, this is not about finding the drug that will make them all better.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather figuring out why things are working so well in classrooms mm-hmm. and so horribly in cafeteria and recess.
Yep.
And the thing that I love is if you can get a group of well-meaning, intelligent educators together mm-hmm. and have them ask the right question,
mm-hmm.
they will give you the answer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is not people from the university or from PBIS world coming in and saying, we have the answer for
right.
you. Mm-hmm. And it turns out if we get people to agree on the data and mm. if we help them to use the data to ask the right questions,
mm-hmm.
the fascinating thing is a group that is just grumpy and unhappy transforms into a group that is effective problem solvers. They come up with action plans.
Mm.
They actually implement things, and it makes a difference. The staff of the school make the school a more effective learning environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they take kids who are themselves unhappy, not just behaving badly, but are unhappy, and they make those kids proud of themselves
mm-hmm.
because the kids walk around. I mean, you just see it in actual body language.
Yeah. Totally.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I know how to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite a thing to hear a kid say that they're proud about their school and they talk about it and
yeah.
they love it. It's that you can tell, you know, when they right. bought into the culture of that place.
Well, and that's why we go into this field yeah. of education. Teachers do not go into the field to punish kids, to manage behaviors, you know, to do these things. We want to affect change in young people and see them be successful, see them become shining stars and shine bright in band or track or
in the cafeteria,
language arts, all of the things and be their best selves. Right. So
that's right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right. You talk about adults being able to like mm-hmm. really look at information and make some decisions and how data can be this equalizer. And it, mm-hmm. It really does highlight, especially when we're talking about referrals, it brings to the surface what everyone's experience is as an adult mm. in the school. I saw this behavior. This is what I did. And so now everybody knows and we can like move from there. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it too in the way that you, in our years ago in our facilitator trainings, teaching on the mm. third day of the training.
Oh, when they were in person back in the day, I was one of those people.
At the yep. Phoenix yep. Inn conference.
Yes, I stayed there. I remember.
And you would share with them the graphs, right? We would yeah. start in one place and move our way through to create what eventually would be, we would call these precision statements.
Right.
And how quickly people would be able to start to look at those data and immediately have something to say about them. It would kind of start in this place where people were like unsure about like, mm-hmm. where's this man going with this whole talk? And okay, fine. And then by the end of it though, you were showing them one graph of like, here's a location graph and what do you know about this? And they would have something to say, and then you would change it, and or you would show the average referrals per day per month, and you would show one version of it, and then you would show another one. And this was all within like 30, 45 seconds, and people were instantly able to see new things and have new ideas about what they would ask next. And so something that Danielle and I were thinking about is in those earlier days of PBIS and going, we know that you went to a school for out in Fern Ridge. Mm-hmm. Was it Fern Ridge Elementary? Is that
middle school?
Middle school. Okay, great. Shout out to them. We actually met a woman who was at that school at a conference recently. And she came up to our booth and was like, I used to work at Fern Ridge.
Oh, really?
Cool. It was great. Anyway, so what we were curious about is like, so you knew that data was going to be an element of this framework, and you were going to introduce it as part of a problem solving process. And so in those earlier days, we've talked about it a little bit. We've told a little bit of your story on our podcast before, where you would show up to the meeting with a graph and they would say, that's really cute. And then you if you could tell us that version of the story, that would be great. And what that overall, what you learned in those early days with that, with those first teams, and how it evolved and what you anticipated the problem solving process would be within the framework.
The early parts of working with Fern Ridge were just fascinating. The principal, Susan Taylor Green, was just a wonderful leader. She was enthusiastic. She was clear. She gave people the resources, but she also gave them room to try things out and struggle. So I became part of their behavior support team. And initially I just went to the meetings. I mean, I was a member of the team. And that was when we were early in the process of collecting Swiss data. And we were just absolutely convinced that collecting data, not just on how often they did something bad, but who it was, where, when, why, who, what, where, when, why, how often, came from that sort of process. The interesting thing is, as with most school personnel, they had learned that data were really something that we were forced to collect and give only to administrators who sent them to the district office, never to be seen again, and one of the things that we knew is you never ask someone to collect data unless they see it being used within 3 months. So
it's a good rule.
So within a 3 month period, if you want me to, if you want me to struggle and collect data, then show me that the time and effort I'm putting in is making a difference.
Absolutely.
And so what they would do is they would fill out their office discipline referral forms and I would take them. And then we actually, I personally didn't do it.
You had a research assistant.
People who were very dear to me did. And they would add them up and put them into graphs. I would take those graphs back to Fern Ridge. And we would always start with, what's the problem? And the problem always started with this behavior is not good. And so I said, let's define the problem differently. Let's talk about where, when, why, how often, how many. I mean, in a middle school, I mean, if you've been in middle schools at all, you know that 3 to 5 kids can destabilize the social culture of a middle school. I mean,
they're very powerful.
It is
these 12 to 14 year old kids.
Well, and they're so based on what the peers are doing. They're so susceptible to that. And
So, and especially now, when you've got social media, it is even a smaller number can even have a larger impact, which is not a good thing for the most part.
That's right.
Part of what we taught them was be careful. Just because kids are behaving badly doesn't mean you always do the same thing. If you've got 3 to 5 kids who are doing stuff, let's target support for those 3 to 5 kids. If you've got 47,
it's different.
Then we've got to back up and we've got to train everybody. We have a big problem, not a little problem. And so we had both of those. Mm-hmm. We had some places where we had a little problem, some places where the kids were confused about what was okay.
Yeah.
Right. And, mm-hmm. and when they're confused, then, I mean, again, middle school is mm-hmm. the greatest. Middle school is the time when you want to get as close to the line of what is acceptable
very as
you possibly
so.
Can mm-hmm. get, right?
Yeah.
And I just love the fact when we first went to Fern Ridge, they had a manual of student conduct, and it had 67 things that you were not to do.
Yep.
You were not to do this, and you were not to do that, and you were not to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they had really worked hard on building that. Yeah. And I said, you know, how many kids know what these are?
Yeah, could deem all 67 things.
And I went out, and they knew a couple of them.
Sure, the big
ones. Yeah, they knew the big ones, right? Yeah.
They didn't. And so I said, you know, it's going to be a whole lot easier if we teach them what to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so let's come up with what to do. Mm-hmm. And rather than walking around being policemen, let's walk around recognizing and acknowledging doing it the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? And it is so much more fun to be focused on doing, acknowledging and teaching proactively.
Yeah.
And the other thing that really was a difference was the way it changed how students interacted with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. There was one elementary school that I think K-5, and they would have the first and third, fourth, and then they had the second grade and fifth grade out together.
Oh,
and
right.
So they would have recess.
Okay.
And
right.
So they had this recess, and the second grade and fifth graders were out, and they had their rules were be respectful, be responsible, be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Being safe on the playground meant going down the slide, not up the slide.
Okay.
Right? Yep.
That was one of the examples.
Yep. Lots of schools have that same rule, I think.
Everybody knows that, right?
Uh-huh.
So I'm out there with the vice principal. We're walking around at recess, and I'm making suggestions about how we organize recess.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this one little third grader, and he starts going up the slide.
Sure.
Okay.
And the principal's eyes light up, but two fifth graders were walking by.
Mm.
And one of them says, "Hey, be safe."
Really?
Stop.
And the third grader stopped and got off the slide.
Oh my God.
Because he knew.
Yeah.
That they knew
that
he knew what he was supposed to be doing, right?
And because they defined it and taught it.
They all knew it, yes.
Knew.
So
knew. Did you just light up?
I bet you were speaking with pride. Oh my
God. Bit inside.
He was like.
The great thing is that principal told that story for the next years and years.
Yeah,
you know, and the idea that this is not controlling the children, it's really empowering.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are so unhappy about what they're doing that's not good, and you're just using punishers and restrictions, containing, and I'm gonna send you to the office, and I'm gonna suspend you, and expel you, and we're going to just think bad things about you.
Yeah.
That is not constructive for anybody. Mm-hmm. It's not good for the adults as well as good for the kids. When you build a social culture exists when there's a group of people who all understand a common set of language, of expectations, of the way that it works.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has agreed, this is the way that it works. And a school, all by itself, can build its own social culture. And you know you've done that not when the kids can fill out a form that says, here are the behavioral expectations.
Right.
You know you've done that when you watch how they interact with each other.
With each other.
Yeah, totally.
So 100%.
That, and the way you get to that is by looking at the data.
Yeah. Mm. So you said that the team was more accustomed to having data be an accountability thing that they would send away.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so how did you overcome that, or how did you help them to reframe it? Mm-hmm. Just by sharing it?
Yep.
Like you'd go and have those graphs produced and bring them.
Mm-hmm. But the way that we did it was basically not by saying, I want you to admire the data. did it by saying, what's the problem you want to deal with?
I gotcha.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got this particular child, okay, let's do an individual intervention.
I got you.
We have this group of girls, great, How do we deal with that? Mm-hmm. And in each case, one of the most important things is data can be overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And the problem behaviors of kids in schools can be overwhelming. Mm-hmm. This is a way in which you've got to make it feel manageable.
Right.
You can bring it back and say, we actually can be clear and be specific. So mm-hmm. we can use the data to take a giant, overwhelming problem and make it logical and prescriptive and mm-hmm. specific. Mm-hmm. Remember, the biggest thing that data do for a team is to get them to ask the right question mm-hmm. of themselves. Mm-hmm. If they say, why is this group of girls mm-hmm. doing this behavior? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And why do they do it here and not there? Mm-hmm. Then it turns out they know the answer to that. Mm-hmm. You don't know it as an outsider.
No. Mm-hmm.
They know it because they're there.
They know those students. They know the setting. They know what's happened last week. All the context.
So mm-hmm. the thing that I loved most, the reason why Fern Ridge really blossomed was because they became much more effective themselves.
Yeah.
It wasn't that they did what we told them to do.
Right.
It's that they learned a process. Mm. And they were incredibly to be credited for being open to trying something.
Yeah, no kidding.
But within a 2-year period, after we taught all the behavioral expectations, we had the reward system, we had the data system. I mean, they reduced problem behaviors by 58%. And more than that, they reduced serious problem behaviors at an even greater rate.
Yeah.
So the teachers were talking about being able to teach. They were, mm-hmm. they
weren't, what a gift.
They weren't being
imagine.
Behavior managers.
That's right.
Right? And that's right. We don't want teachers to have the feeling that PBIS means all I do is behavior management. Mm-mm. We want them to have the sense that when you implement PBIS, that's when you really are able to do excellent teaching.
Right. Yeah. That's when we get into being our great language arts teachers and doing our poetry unit.
Right? There you go.
Right. I'm drawing on my own experience of the stuff I wanted to do.
But right? spent so much of your time but just managing.
When I was at a school that didn't have PBIS, for sure. It was
That's
different.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Your poetry is all about problem behavior.
Rob, when someone shows you a graph, are there questions that you always ask?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the first question is, what's the decision you want to make?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
A graph is just a graph and it's got data, right?
Cute. That's what you would say. Yeah. I can hear you say it in my mind. That's cute.
Oh, that's cute. That's cute.
Well, the other thing is, the reason to ask that question uh-huh. is you will never have all the data that you want.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that whole process was realizing that if we focus first mm-hmm. on how are we going to help kids to be more successful, right? What is really, we got to define the problem with precision. Mm-hmm. What, who, where, when, why, how often.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got to do more than that. We've got to think about how does that fit given the kids that we're working with.
Right.
Yeah.
So part of what we learn is we learn that we'll never have enough information to make an ironclad decision.
Mm-hmm.
We're always going to be making decisions with a little bit less information than we wanted.
Mm.
So your job, my job, our job is to give people the right information at the right time in the right form
mm-hmm.
so that then they can use their personal experience to make it fit for decisions in mm-hmm. that situation.
Mm-hmm.
If they only rely on their personal experience, mm-hmm. then they come up with disjointed, mm-hmm. odd things mm-hmm. that work for Mary Lou, but not for Eric,
mm-hmm.
right? They don't make us a school. Individual teachers That's right. have forever That's been coming right. up with what works for them.
Yeah, in sure. their room with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're, especially in a middle school where you go from teacher to teacher,
right.
it can be, you know, schizophrenic.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I can do this in Mr. Jones'
That's
room,
right.
yeah.
not in Ms. Elliott's.
Exactly.
And so,
yeah.
And the kids figure that stuff out.
They really do.
And it undermines our ability to say, look, we're a whole school.
Yep.
So part of it was using the data to say what's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Getting everybody in the school to agree to a common picture of what are we trying to solve. If the data help to get the team and then the whole faculty to agree, this is what we're working on, you've already made half the gain.
Right.
Once you've got there, then now this is the problem we're solving. Too often, school teams are made up of 7 or 8 or 10 people who are talking in one meeting, but when you actually listen to it, when you listen to their podcast,
the podcast version of their meeting.
It sounds like they're solving different problems.
Right.
And they're each solving it from their perspective of the elephant, but they're not agreeing. Data help you to first agree, what's the problem we're working on?
Gotcha.
Data help you to then come up to say, what's the smallest change that a normal human can do that'll make a real difference with the kid? Data tell you, are we actually doing what we said we would do?
Yes.
Data tell you, did it work? And think about then walking into the faculty meeting and saying, hey, you ready? Last month, you know, we had 27 office discipline referrals. That's compared to 198 the month before.
Wow. Yeah.
This is what you did. This is the difference it's making. Now, one of those 27 was not a good thing, and we're working on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Mary Lou, don't back
we'll get
up.
We'll get to that. Yeah.
But I want you to think about what that does for a faculty. A sense of, my goodness, these people are listening when we say we have a problem. They're actually using the information. And so that's where we came up with that. That's what guided the design of Swiss.
Yeah.
And so if you look at Swiss.
Yeah.
It is designed to start with a big picture. Do we really have a problem?
Right.
Don't go straight down to how many of everything has everybody ever done, right? We want to start with, do we actually have a problem?
Right.
And then define the problem with enough precision that you say, is it a lot of people? Is it a few people? Is it in all places? Is it in some places? Is it only in the morning, only in the afternoon? Is it done to get attention? Is it done to avoid either social issues or academic issues? What is it done to, what appears to be the most common maintaining reward? Once you've got that, then it becomes manageable.
Right.
And you think, we can actually change that.
Sure.
And we don't have to buy a $30,000, you know, box and get 9 years of training.
Yeah.
We can fix this ourselves. And so of all the things that I'm most proud of, it's the extent to which the data systems that we've taught people to use have made them more effective.
I agree.
Absolutely.
And it was so innovative when you first came up with it. Like Swiss was, there wasn't another thing that was like it. And now you look at the marketplace and there's lots of systems that are trying to do the same thing. But what's built into the applications that you helped to create is this process of like accurate data, consistent data, and with the thought that someone is going to share it regularly. So there's something about it that's just a little bit different. It was so innovative at the time.
Absolutely.
And I think continues to be in some ways, which is really exciting.
Yes. Well, I remember when Danielle came to ECS.
Really?
Yep. And one of the things that was so exciting about your joining was you had been successful at helping people use data.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
You actually, and people didn't say, oh, she helps us use the data. They talk, when we do our job well, people don't talk about us. They talk about what they have done successfully.
Right. Yeah. That's what coaching is, right?
Yes.
And the interesting thing, though, is you got to be careful that people don't think they're done. Okay, we can stop. We can stop collecting data.
Right.
Right.
You need regularly to say, how are we doing? How are the kids doing? And one of the big things is, are we doing what we said we would do?
Mm-hmm.
People say, oh, well, we're implementing PBIS. Mm.
But are you?
And we say, great. Uh-huh. You know, what's your TFI score?
Yeah.
And it's not an intention or a belief or a desire. It's whether you've established the core features of positive behavior support.
Mm-hmm.
If you've done that, you can call it whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And Megan, your point about the other data systems that have developed, it is wonderful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not a competition.
No.
This is mm-hmm. we want people to use what works for them.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I would keep coming back to, though, there are too many situations where people think because they bought and implemented the data system, they're done.
Yeah, right.
Don't build data systems. Build decision systems.
Yes.
Build problem-solving systems. Mm-hmm. So the data are just one source of information that allows a group of people
mm-hmm.
to make decisions that are more practical and more effective and more efficient.
Mm. Okay.
Yes. Have you met someone? We've talked a little bit about the difference that this framework has made in the schools that you've worked with and what you've seen in the field. Have there been times, I would imagine, there have been times in your career where you've gone to talk to somebody about implementing PBIS and they said, that's a bunch of malarkey and no thank you. Have you seen any change in people who have that perspective over the course of time, you know, and implementing and looking at data and seeing the difference and being like, okay, maybe there was something to this whole thing.
We all have our personal journeys.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And
experiences in education.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there are many people who find the behavioral foundation of PBIS challenging.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually they have misinformation about the mechanistic view of behavior analysis as being a strategy for controlling people.
Manipulating.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Instead, the behavioral perspective is really one of saying, understand the context that a child is experiencing.
Sure.
Understand. And with kids with disabilities, they may be coming with different physiological expectations.
Mm-hmm.
They may
right.
be coming from different contexts where they've learned things that worked in that context that don't work in the new context.
Yep.
The answer over time is if you're in a district that has 32 schools and you say, our school is definitely not going to do that.
Yeah.
And 15 of the other schools say they are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 years later, those 15 schools have a quarter of the office referrals that you do. And their kids have a much greater percentage of their kids who are reading at proficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Then the question comes back, well, what are you going to do?
Right.
I gave a presentation once in California to a team that was working in a district. And a woman came up and she said, I really believe in a different approach to doing this and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And my response was to say, you know, if you are happy with how the kids are behaving, don't change.
Mm-hmm.
If they are doing things just fine, don't change.
Yeah. Why would you?
Right.
But if you are unhappy with what they're doing,
right.
don't expect them to change if you don't.
Absolutely.
And so if you're saying we're going to change, if you don't want to do PBIS, that's fine. But think about the features of an environment that is going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And PBIS is not a religion. No, it's not a cult. It's the smallest number of core things that you can do that are empirically validated to make schools more effective learning environments. Mm-hmm. And
that's all.
And if
so simple,
if you can come up with something that's better, faster, and cheaper,
great.
We are for it.
Yeah.
Let's do. Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
But sweetheart, you got to show us that you actually do it.
Yeah.
Right.
And,
right.
And so I'm very proud of, I think the large group. I mean, we've got 25,000 schools that mm-hmm. have been implemented. Mm-hmm. At one point, we had identified over 15 million children effective. Are in schools that are wow. in more effective environments.
Wow. Yeah.
So, amazing. And that's just in the U.S.
Right.
I mean, the number of, there's 20 other countries
yep.
that have mm-hmm. been adopting PBIS.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. so anyway,
yeah. mm-hmm.
I think I love the fact that you were wise enough to say, let's have a podcast that focuses on data.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. if we were doing this and we had visuals.
Sure.
Yeah.
We could walk through and we could look at the graphs and we could say, what yeah. would you, and when you look at the graphs, what do you see?
Yeah.
And your eyes light up. You think, I see problem behavior in the cafeteria with a candlestick, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And,
right. Yeah.
And, but mm-hmm. The real thing for this is data are a source of information.
Mm-hmm.
They're an element. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Not the end all.
No.
They're a piece.
A piece.
They're used for good decision making. And the beautiful thing that we see in data is it transforms teams who are frustrated mm-hmm. and burning out
mm-hmm.
into teams that are vigorous, effective,
mm-hmm.
they become leaders in the school,
mm-hmm.
and they make a difference mm-hmm. in the extent to which children benefit, both socially and academically.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. The last question that we had for you that was really kind of important for both of us, because we've mm-hmm. talked about it a little bit a few times over the course of these years.
Yes.
I can't imagine that in those early days that all you and your partners could have thought that PBIS would sweep the nation.
Right. That one day you might even have a podcast dedicated to the topic, right?
For example,
yeah.
that this was not necessarily the vision mm-hmm. that you would have 25,000 schools and 15 million students mm-hmm. affected by this framework. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was. Maybe you dreamed big and you thought it could be. But we're curious about what was your vision in those early days with mm-hmm. the teams of people that you worked with, your mm-hmm. colleagues in the schools. How have you seen it evolve mm-hmm. over your career? And then what do you see coming?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you anticipate?
Yeah.
Where do you hope it goes?
You know, a very insightful comment. And we certainly did not anticipate being part of podcasts.
Me neither.
They didn't exist.
I just pretend like this my dream job when I was a kid was to be a radio host.
Yeah.
And so that's all this is for me.
It
just
is.
Living out.
Radio is different now. Radio is on demand.
Yeah.
And it's working.
Sure is. So.
We were first really committed to helping the schools in Oregon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And once we had 50 schools, we had enough that we had learned not only how to do it, but how to scale it up a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
The real shift was when we moved from Rob and George going to school districts
uh-huh.
and working with them to training facilitators and trainers
mm-hmm.
in other districts. Mm-hmm. When we worked with Lucille Eber in Illinois.
Sure.
When we worked with Susan Barrett in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found were here were these educators who were phenomenal communicators,
mm-hmm.
who had built the trust in their settings where people were willing to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
When we could give them the tools, we would go and work with an initial group of schools.
Mm-hmm.
But when we did it, we would train them to be trainers. Then we would back out and mm-hmm. they would do the training.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Once we saw that happening, I mean, we actually thought, this is so obvious. It is so common sense.
Yeah, this mm-hmm. could be a thing.
We have adapted it mm-hmm. to the way that schools actually operate. We thought we could make a difference
yeah. sure.
in a vast majority.
Mm-hmm.
We got a little, maybe 30%.
Yeah.
But in all honesty, my vision was much more than that. So,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't, the real difference was not what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was, remember when we first created the PBIS Forum in Chicago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we started pulling people together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The people who would come were not individuals. They were teams.
Teams, right.
And they were teams that came with leaders. And we were able to use that as a way not just to update people on the newest things and how to make it better, and effective, how to do problem solving at district levels and state levels, but we also learn from them. I mean, we learned from Steve Goodman in Michigan. Yep. We learned from Eric Close in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So we were able to take what Lucille Eber taught us in Illinois and do it in different states. Mm-hmm. We were naively optimistic.
Yeah, sure.
At least I was. I'm sure George was very rational.
More grounded about it, yeah.
In terms of where things are going.
Yeah, yeah.
We are at a cusp of massive transformation. The use of artificial intelligence to summarize and organize the data can make... so. Think about any team that is using PBIS and the TIPS process as a data analyst.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
We can do the data analyst role through an AI.
Right. Sure. Prompts into ChatGPT.
The AI will never give you the answer.
That's right.
But it will summarize the data and allow you to ask the right questions.
That's right.
And that is a huge, it makes it easier. It makes it faster.
Yep.
The way that we're able to also get information from children is hugely different. I love the fact, for example, that the state of California collects school climate data. Mm-hmm. It asks the kids, do you feel safe? Right? Do you feel comfortable? Mm-hmm. I mean, Oregon has a version of doing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's something that we should always use. Mm-hmm. It's not just... are adults thinking the kids are okay? It's what do the kids tell us? And and unless they feel safe and comfortable, it's not going to be an effective learning environment.
Exactly.
If we do PBIS well, we create environments that are predictable, consistent, positive, and safe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's the kids know what to expect. They know what to expect, and it's consistent across people, across places in the school, and across time of day. So it's not that I have to be Jekyll in the morning and Hyde in the afternoon, right? It's right?
Mm-hmm.
And the kids not only are safe, they feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very different.
They are.
Right?
Yep.
So those are, that's one direction. So the use of data to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we've learned, and the data system really taught us this, is implementation of PBIS requires district or regional support. So if you're in rural schools, you need the regional center.
Yeah.
If you're in a district, the district has to invest in the data system. You can't have the school do it.
Right.
So we've got to do a better job of saying the role of the state, the role of the district or region, and then the role of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've done much better at talking about what teachers do and what schools do.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do more about defining what the district and states do.
Mm-hmm. We were very grateful that you spent some time with us today to share this history, your experience, and your insights about this framework that really started with you and your colleagues so many years ago, and that we've helped to move forward,
right, scale it up,
and hopefully with a vision for where you all started. So thank you so much for sharing that with us again and with our listeners too. We appreciate you.
You're very kind.
Yes. Thank you, Rob. You brought lots of laughter to it.